passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
Second hour is live, and we'll continue talking to many guests, including Daniel Libet in just a minute. It was a year ago today. You remember what happened? Auburn fans? Brian Harsin was let go, which surprised nobody. The speculation had been rampant for months, which led me to a piece by Ross Dellinger today, who wrote, for the first time in more than a decade, no college coaches have been fired or resigned in the first 2 months for on-field reasons. There have been others let go, obviously, like Mel Tucker, for off-the-field reasons, but nobody's been fired because they simply suck as a head coach. That could change. Let's get back to the calls, and the sapient one is up next.
Well done. I got to tell you, you know, you and I have not been complimenting each other too much recently, but I've got to tell you, Sir Paul, that was sheer sapient brilliance. Lawyer-esque, the way you handled that Auburn goon, goob, that called you a sycophant for Saban. That's your new title, sycophant for Saban. Sheer brilliance. That was great, lawyer. Well played.
Hey, Jim, I will take that criticism every day of the week that I'm a sycophant for Saban.
That's what the show's all about, Paul. And that's fun stuff, good stuff. And, you know, I called for this reason. Our guy, paralegal, sapient staff member of the Feinbaum Show Network, Augie from New Orleans, he did a 900-foot home run yesterday. And that's the kind of call that we used to have that would cause everybody that's got a brain that knows how to talk, get on the radio right away. And that was the best 10-minute segment or 12-minute segment you had yesterday after Augie, then me, then I-Man, and, you know, I don't know who else. But that was great stuff. You got to admit, right?
That was Hall of Fame material right there.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the kind of calls that make you – that's the stuff – it's like great players breed great players. Great plays breed great plays. That's what we're looking for this Saturday. And, man, I hope he rushes – Saban, you've got to rush 11 like Bill Oliver did. That's all I got to say. If you don't, you're a moron. But if you do, you'll win the game.
He better rush more than four.
Absolutely. Never four. But you know what the Bill Oliver – tell the audience what the Bill Oliver plan was that defeated Miami. Tell that about –
Well, Oliver said – yeah, I mean, his philosophy was they only have one player over there that matters, and we're gonna rush 11 guys and try to stop him. And I think he was sacked, 11 times in the game?
Just tell him – just describe it like a play-by-play guy. I mean, come on. In other words,
Gino Toretta.
Before he could get his hand on the ball, he was smothered.
I mean, by the third quarter, he went over. I think I saw this. Could have been drunk, but he went over to the manager and said, "Give me a white flag. I'm done with this guy. I'm out of here."
Well, he didn't have to do that. They'd already stuck it up on the sideline before he got back to the huddle.
No, you're right. It was a major beatdown.
And that's exactly what they need to do. There's no way Daniels can do anything under that kind of pressure.
Well, that's not the kind of player he is. I mean, he's a scrambling quarterback, a running quarterback, and so he's always,
he won't even have a chance to run if they do what we're talking about. They'll be all over him.
Yeah, I mean, a Bryce Young or a Tua could probably, you know, flip the ball quickly, but this guy, I think this guy's hopefully, Kevin Steele's listening right now.
Absolutely. And hopefully more so Nick Saban, because I hope he intervenes on stuff. I've wondered lately, does he intervene with these coaches?
Of course he does.
I mean, on the field, though. You know, I've wondered, does he just let Reed
do it? No.
On
the defensive side, I still think Saban calls the shots.
You mean right there on the field while it's going on?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think he knows the game plan, but he can overrule anything.
But I've wondered, Paul, has he done that? It doesn't look like at times he's done that.
Well, I feel like the defense has come on pretty strong this year.
Paul, there's no question about that. That's not my point.
Well, I will. Are you going to? Am I going to have to call him and tell him what you're saying? I will. I'll do it.
If I had the number, I'd call.
Well, I've got the. You're not a sycophant like I am.
Well, no, I'm not. And that's why I think more important that you tell him what I said.
I will. I will say, Coach, hate to bother you. I know you're in the middle of practice, but the sapient one says this is what you ought to do.
Well, again, well played with a goober from Auburn. That was beautiful. It's like, what did he say? What's this guy? What are you saying? I mean, you know, that was beautiful why you did that with that guy.
Well, Jim, I know a lot of people are counting me out, but I still got a couple of plays left in me.
Well, bring them on. We need them. See you, Paul.
Thank you. Thank you. Let's check in with Dylan next. Hello, Dylan.
Hey, Paul. How you doing, man?
We are doing well. Thank you.
Thanks for taking my call. Longtime listener, lifelong Alabama fan. That guy that was, I forget, what he, how did he refer to you as a Nick Saban what?
Sycophant. Homer.
Yeah, Homer. That's what I was going to call it. Obviously, he doesn't listen to your show very much. But besides the point, what I was going to say was the game he was referring to was maybe 6 or 7 years ago. It was maybe Middle Tennessee, someone like that, late in the season.
Yeah, it was not a big deal.
No, it wasn't. It was like just the students.
And
you know,
Saban was, when he did it, and I did remember it, he was talking, I mean, he was talking about being there for the players.
Oh, well, the fans are always there for the players. Happened.
By the way, coaches do that every week. I mean, I was with Kirby Smart the other day. I was with another coach. They always talk to Saban when we were there for the Tennessee game. They always talk to the fans because it's just part and parcel of what they do.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And that's part of being a leader of a program. That's the difference between being a coach and being a leader of a program right there. But, yeah, man, I just wanted to call in and talk to you about that because that just blew my mind that he called you a Nick Saban homer because, like I said, I've been listening to your show since I was a little kid, man, and I wanted to – you've had me fired up a couple of times some stuff you said about Saban. But
well, I mean, there's no question. If you've listened to me over the years, you've heard it all. But that's fine. I have – when
that's
people want to, everybody's welcome. I mean, that's what this show is about. I offer opinions, but I want you guys to do the same thing. Thank you very, very much. This guy, I thought died a few minutes. He was declared dead, but apparently expired and still alive.
Paul, I just wanted to let everybody know that may have been my hearse, but I wasn't in the back of it. I'm surviving somehow. Through the season, but another thing I want to know is with Jim, I would like to know what pill he found to be so happy. That has to be the miracle drug, and if I could find out from Jim what pill he's on, I'd love to buy stock in it. That is one amazing pill.
No, you're right about that.
and the last thing, Paul, I mean, that guy went from, I mean, I thought jumping off a cliff to now, I mean, playing with unicorns and rainbows.
That's dangerous.
That is dangerous. The last thing I want to say, Paul, is I really, and one thing I'm going to miss is when Jimbo gets fired, I'm going to miss this feud with Lane Kiffin. Lane's press conferences just tend to continue to take jabs at Jimbo. Last year, the quarterback, Dart, and the running back who's really, really
no,
good.
No, you're right. I was talking to a friend of mine today about, remember the Jimbo Saban deal. The Jimbo Saban feud was very brief. It was emotional, and it ended. The Lane Kiffin-Jimbo feud is ongoing, and it is, I think it's the most bitter feud in the SEC.
Yes, I can't wait for Saturday if we can somehow upset them. I'll hold Jimbo punches that sucker right in the face.
Because Lane did exactly what you're saying. He made some very slight reference yesterday, act like he was just rambling, but it was on his mind. Oh yeah, you know, and they're trying to get bowl eligible.
There's no doubt.
That was a shot.
That was a shot. Somebody as dumb as AC could figure that one out.
Well, I beg to disagree with you, Expired. I don't think AC could figure any. I mean, you could open the vault at Fort Knox and say, AC, you got 10 minutes in there to get all the gold you want, and he would bump his head and pass out.
I would. That guy. Pretty impressive now that he has Dabo going to A&M. I mean, his brilliancy ceases to amaze me.
Well, listen, great to hear from you. Glad to know you're alive. That's the most important thing, is to be alive. We'll take a short break. We have a guest coming up, more on Dabo, more on the weekend coming up. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Yeah, we welcome you back. Always great to catch up with Daniel Libet, the outstanding reporter at Sportico. His latest talking about the NCAA trying to alter things a little bit when it comes to enforcement, and that's a big deal right now considering what could be coming down the pike, or may not be, who knows, with the Michigan situation. Daniel, good afternoon. Thanks so much for being here.
My pleasure, Paul. Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about what is happening. We certainly know Charlie Baker, the new man, making a lot of noise, making a lot of news. But the question is, what is changing? You've dug pretty deep into the situation, and what did you find?
Well, yeah. So Charlie, when he came on in the spring to replace Mark Emmert as NCAA president, also brought with him his former chief of staff when he was the governor of Massachusetts, a guy named Tim Buckley, to oversee the NCAA's public outreach effort, their PR department. And they've tried to take a little bit of a different tact. I don't know if it's any more successful, that's debatable, at what is the public perception of the NCAA in general, and specifically the NCAA's enforcement arm, was a much maligned enforcement arm. And so they've tried this two-pronged attack of both emphasizing and investing in media and content that has nothing to do with, one, FBS football, and two, with enforcement, and trying to sort of move the conversation beyond all the daily headlines of who is being investigated for what or what infraction is apparently or supposedly being broken. That's one thing. And at the same time, they're being much more engaged and in some ways confrontational on enforcement. In some ways, this is a bit of a paradox. They're both talking about enforcement more and trying to talk about enforcement less at the same time as they're trying to triage what has always been, at least for the last 10 or 15 years, a losing PR battle for the NCAA, which is, you know, the punitive function, the job it has of punishing schools and athletes.
And this all is happening parallel to what could be one of the biggest NCAA cases in recent time, I offered maybe not, because nobody really knows what's happening in the Michigan case. And I realized that wasn't the point of your piece. But it is interesting to juxtapose one over the other, because there's already this perception, Daniel, that the NCAA is out to get Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah, this is very interesting. In some ways, this actually should be within the NCAA sweet spot. This is not an issue regarding an athlete and impermissible benefits, which is not proven to be, or even in the case of Tez Walker, North Carolina, a transfer waiver. This has nothing to do with athletes whatsoever. This is really a pretty cut and dry matter of NCAA rules and fair play. But to your point, you know, there's a history between Jim Harbaugh and the NCAA dating back even earlier this year, when the NCAA was investigating Harbaugh over impermissible benefits to recruits. And the way that the NCAA responded publicly at that time while the investigation was still underway. So there's that. There's obviously, you know, Jim Harbaugh is a bit of a lightning rod outside of Michigan fans. He has a lot of detractors. So there's the way that this is setting up, that the NCAA could actually manage this in a way that it that has eluded it on some of these other issues involving athletes. However, because of just the general dissatisfaction with enforcement, it'll be interesting, and it has been interesting, to see how Harbaugh responds and whether or not he uses the NCAA's reputation against it. And again, if this becomes a kind of public battle, as we saw between the NCAA and North Carolina on the Tez Walker transfer waiver drama. This was a uncharacteristically public battle, war of words between the NCAA and a member institution. It sort of signaled that the NCAA wants to, at least when it's being called out on a decision, it wants to respond and wants to be part of the conversation. I don't know that it benefited the NCAA's reputation in the Tez Walker situation, but it may signal how the NCAA wants to approach any of these, you know, publicly voluble decisions it makes, including the Harbaugh and Michigan matter.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting, as you talked about in your piece about some of their public relation tactics. But I wonder, Daniel, if they're just not preaching to the same crowd, because the crowd of intelligent, I'll use some of the NCAA code language that I hear from commissioners all the time, thoughtful, purposeful-minded people, probably already have a pretty good understanding. It's the folks that call in shows like this one who hate the NCAA and are going to hate them no matter what type of PR people they have and no matter how many reporters they invite to their infractions committees or those who spend the day with Charlie Baker at a volleyball match. And I know I'm trying not to preach here, but I think you understand where I'm going.
Yeah, certainly do. Well, this has been even when Mark Emmert started. I mean, you know, he also, when he took over, you know, 13 years ago, he also had an initiative to try to educate the public and reform perspective on the infractions process, and did many of the kinds of things that Charlie Baker and his staff have done in the last year of bringing reporters in, inviting them behind the curtain, talking to people like me about what their PR initiative is.
Right.
And, you know, this works for a bit of time. But, yeah, in some ways, the conversation has just gotten so much larger than the technicalities of the enforcement process. It really has become a larger debate about amateurism and pay to play and NIL and all of these issues that has been a challenge for the NCAA to really reconcile with. And it hasn't wanted to have or really engage in those deeper debates and conversations. And so it does the simpler things, which are, you know, the educating the public and educating the media. I'm saying that in air quotes, that it has engaged in over the last several months.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm trying not to be too cynical here. I've met Baker. I've heard him speak. Perfectly nice guy. But in the end, he's not convincing me or anybody who's not married to the system of what he can or cannot do, because you know there's so many layers to scrape away, and I realize I'm trying to conflate the Harbaugh situation just to a bunch of angry fans who hate the government, who hate this, who hate that. But to me, that's where the battle lines are right now in college sports. They're not with the people you've already that are already tuned in. It's those who just can't trust you because you've affected one of their schools.
Well, that's true. And I mean, and again, it's that on top of just the general belief that the NCAA has outlived its usefulness and that college sports has grown beyond its ability to enforce, and that a lot of what it's trying to enforce doesn't even make any sense anymore. And so, you know, I mean, the knock on the Emmert regime was that, you know, the NCAA didn't go bold enough, that it really wasn't a forward-thinking enough organization, and it was, you know, trying to do superficial things at a time that deep reform was really needed, and then ultimately was dragged across The reform line, if it was NIL, and it's probably going to be dragged into a situation where athletes are being paid directly by schools, and hasn't really had much to say. Now, the qualifier is always the NCAA is just the governing body. It represents the members. You know, the members themselves also need to be held accountable for what does or doesn't happen. But as this governing body and as this, you know, as these spokespeople for the current system, you know, I don't see the current regime to be much more much bolder than the previous regime. I think, you know, you could make some arguments that Baker's been a little bit more effective as a politician than Emmert, but I don't know at the end of the day what he has done so far indicates that, you know, the NCAA is in much different standing than it was, you know, 9 or 10 months ago.
Well said. Always great to catch up with Daniel Libet from Sportico. Always an interesting conversation. We'll take a short break. More of your reaction to everything going on right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back here. Tuesday afternoon. Greg is up next in Tennessee. Hello, Greg.
Hey, Paul. How you doing today?
Thank you.
I wanted to call and make a comment on the Tyler and Dabo situation. As a Clemson fan, I agree with Tyler. I did, not all of it, but most of it. And I think it's embarrassing for Clemson University what the coach did last night. And I heard it, and in listening to it, you know what? I mean, I thought I was listening to a Trump rally, the way he was bragging about what all he had done in his life. And I think, you know, we've all heard that. I'm tired of hearing it. And, you know, about the only thing he's got left to do is to walk on water, jump a tall building. I don't know what he – but, you know, I think it was embarrassing for the school. I do.
Well, I think any time a coach has to explain to his core – and, by the way, people listening to a call-in show aren't average fans. I mean, those are diehard fans who live in this stuff. You already lose, and he's not the only one who's ever done it. It just seems like he does it a lot.
Yeah, he does. He does. I don't really think he needs to be fired. I'm not suggesting that at all.
No, I don't think anybody does.
I think the AD and maybe the president, maybe they ought to talk to him because, you know, I he's full of himself because he made a statement last night that, you know, couldn't stand to hear, said he'd never failed at anything. Well, you know, I tell you what, in order to, you know, great people fail all the time. And, you know, a lot of times you have to fail in order to reach the goals that you're trying to reach. And with him making that statement, he'd never failed. And then a couple of weeks ago, he made a statement about he would still win 2 or 3 more national championships. Brags an awful lot, and I don't like the bragging. It reminds me of Donald Trump. I like Trump, but I can't stand his bragging. I can't stand it. But
thank
anyway,
you. Thank you very much for the call. Really appreciate it. Dr. Bulldog is up next.
Great dialogue. I love the show, Paul. You know, it was good to hear from my boy Jimmy in Tuscaloosa a few callers back about half hour ago. I kind of miss him coming after me, blowing me up, the hatred, the venom. Georgia and Alabama is going to meet up. It's going to happen. Alabama's going to beat LSU at the crib. I'm still on cloud 9, as you might imagine, Paul, because what we did against Florida a couple of days ago, could have probably scored a couple of more touchdowns in the second quarter and getting the ball at the beginning of the third quarter after the kickoff. But we scored 43 points on their asses, and now it's on to Mississippi. You know, it's good old-fashioned – I mean, Missouri, excuse me. Missouri ain't no joke, man. You know, we got them at the crib in Athens, and I know Kirby Smart got that thing dialed in. The players are not overlooking anybody, but relative to Dabo Swinney and his rant, it was not that long ago that Kirby had to go through the same thing. Remember, Kirby Smart went 6-6 his first year. And then in the second year, we lost to Alabama on 4th-and-26 on that tour – to a throw, and then we lost to them again in the SEC championship game a year later. So old Kirby rolled up his sleeves, got some coaches in there that loves what he's doing and schemed up some athletes, 5 stars, and recruited and got it done, you know. And we lost to Alabama 2 years ago in the SEC championship game and beat them on a rematch in the Natty. So the moral of the story is this, Dabo. You know, get your act together, recruit some kids, and roll your sleeves up like Kirby did and take it from there. You know, Kirby kept his mouth shut during those lean times. It was a time when they said he couldn't win the big game, couldn't win in the big spot. You know, 3 years ago, we lost to Florida, Paul. And then we lost to Alabama in the SEC title game before winning back-to-back natties. So Kirby's doing his deal, man. He kept his mouth shut. I think Dabo needs to stop crying and bragging, as a previous caller referenced, and take it from there, man. You know, I'm not even a Clemson fan. I know where he's going. I don't think the caller was out of line. You know, some Georgia fans call for Kirby's head after the first year. People forget about that, 6-6.
Dabo's paid big money to do that show, so the idea is to let fans vent. If you don't want to do it, then don't do the show.
Yeah, that's a good point, man. He's thin-skinned. And he's had a lot of great success. I know where, to a degree, where Dabo's coming from, but you got to look toward the future. Fans are fans, man, you know?
But a lot of great coaches have said in private, I can't believe these people are treating me like this after all I've done. But it's just dangerous to do that in public. It really is. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. How about Steve up next? Hello, Steve.
Yeah, how you doing?
We are doing great.
Yeah. I wanted to defend Dabo because I don't think he's bragging, and I don't think he's being arrogant. I think he had to do that because he has to defend his job, because so many times you have head coaches. I mean, no head coach or no player comes into the beginning of the season and says, I want to lose games, right? That's part of the game. You're going to lose games. You're going to make calls that is not going to work all the time because you got a good defense, right? But what I believe Dabo was trying to defend his job, and he has to do it because you have so many times in college and professional sports, you have reporters want to get these hot takes and talk about and they get these fans on these bandwagons where they start saying they start calling for these coaches' jobs, and you can't do that. Especially in football, because you have to build a culture. You can't have a coach in there for 2 to 3 years and expect to win the championship. It's not going to happen. It can't happen. You know, he's there for 3 years. You cut him when he loses, and then you expect him to win. You expect the team to win. You got to give it time. Because football is like what? How many? 53 players, 11 players on each side of the ball. You got to get these players on the same page. Right, so all I think he was doing was just defending his job, and the Tyler kid, you know, what do you? The thing I disagree with him is you counting his money. Why are you in this man's pocket like that?
All fair comments. Thank you very much for the call. Jim is up next.
Well, you know, Paul, I had class with that guy, and I told you what he was about, and I don't like to be negative. I probably shouldn't even say this. I probably should keep my mouth shut because, like a preacher told me one time, when you point one finger at somebody, you got four fingers pointing back at you. You know, when you do your fingers with your hand, you know what I mean.
Sure.
But Dabo's that's just Dabo. He's arrogant. He's just that. He's full of himself, and I couldn't stand the guy when I was around him a little bit, as little as possible when I had a class with him. That's all I can tell you, Paul. You know it. I told you. Was I not first on the job on that one?
Yeah. You nailed it when everybody was talking about what a great guy he was.
Oh, what a great, yeah. I think he's inferior. He hardly got in the game under Stallings, you know.
He was a walk-on.
I know that. Yeah, and he barely got in the game. If he got in the game, it was pity for him to get in the game. He wasn't a bad, horrible player, but he just wasn't as good as a A1 player. You know what I mean? And I don't know. I think he's insecure.
I think that's pretty obvious. Yeah. I mean, because nobody in his position would ever respond like
that. Do that. Yeah, it sounds like something Legion would do, you know.
Yeah, I mean it's like it's like the old, you know, some of the people, the police stop you and you go, do you know who I am? I mean, everybody.
You can't. No, they're already offended if you don't say, oh, hey, sir, Mr. Sweeney, Coach Sweeney, how you doing? Yeah, I know who you are. They're offended if you don't recognize them. But of like course. Old Danny Sheridan told me. Go ahead.
What did Danny say? I want to hear this.
Well, Danny told me, you know, years ago, you know, when I first got on the show, I got mad at all these gurus that went, like that, what's that guy, Epidemic, what's his name?
Expired.
Yeah, he needs to expire. But anyway, it came to mind, don't be mad at him, because remember what Danny told you. He said, if they just get your name right and acknowledge you, you're way ahead of the game. That's all you want. And he got my name right. Dr. Bull got my name right, and whoever else was it. But anyway, Dr. Bull,
that used to be the old joke in my former profession when you would you call somebody and you say, it's going to be a tough story. And the guy would say, hey, just spell my name right.
Well, that's what Danny Sheridan told me. You know, he's the dean of your staff. He's the he's the dean of the staff. So I respect and said, and I've had a hard time with that, but, you know, I finally accepted it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that because only when you strike back do you really show yourself. Hey, Jim, thank you very much. We're up against a break. More to come right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
John is up next in Mobile. Good afternoon.
Coach Feinbaum.
Yes, good afternoon to you. How are you?
Hey, happy Halloween from Mobile. I got a question for you.
Thank you.
I'm assuming you've watched the football games now being broadcast on the ESPN channel with the split screens. Do you like that, watching the game like that?
I'm trying to – I mean, is that done on the main broadcast, or is this an alternate broadcast?
No, it's done on the main broadcast. There's a left screen and a right screen, and then there's the yardage results underneath.
Well, I think what you're talking about here is what they call the command center. And a couple of times this year on the SEC network, the early game has been on there, but that is not the main broadcast. The main broadcast would be on ESPN. I do not like it, though, and I think it's a little too cluttered.
Yeah, it's kind of weird trying to watch the game. And I had a friend of mine who we call Fortune Dave. The first time he saw it, he almost had to go to the eye doctor afterwards.
Well, but remember, that is never
comprehend it.
That's never the main. We used to do the mega cast for some of the big games, and people always got confused. And we would try to let them know, hey, there's another. You have the game is actually on another on ESPN, but I realize it is confusing, and I think sometimes the fault is not explaining. If you don't like this, you go somewhere else, and the game will be on a. No, I just want to watch the game. I don't want to see anything else.
Right, exactly. One more question: did you ever have any association with Dennis Smitherman, the sports editor out of the Mobile Press?
Yes, I sure did. I knew Dennis, not well because I was just starting out, but I met him a number of times. I always remember him being a really kind gentleman. And it was early in my career, but I definitely met him a couple of times.
Yeah, first-class guy. Hey, really enjoyed the show, and keep up the good work.
Thank you very much. You be well. Let's check in with Don in Oxford next. Hello, Don.
Hey, Paul, this is a first-time caller. I've listened to you for a long time. And what I wanted to talk about is the transfer portal and NIL. And, you know, I heard recently that, you know, people have been going, ADs and everything, have been going to Congress and everything, talking to them about it and everything. Why can't we get, you know, Greg Sankey and all the commissioners for each league get together and get an agreement of a cap of amount of money each school is going to get or each league or whatever, and don't go to Congress for it. Let's try to get together as, you know, Big Ten, Pac-12, Big 12, SEC, and all these leagues together and put a cap on it. And I'm all for these kids making money. No doubt, you know, they deserve it. But if we don't get some sort of, you know, regulation on it, and another thing is a transfer portal. You know, things have really, really changed for the coaches. If you notice nowadays, Nick Saban is smiling a lot more. Before, he used to be, you know, always mad and everything, which I love him smiling and everything. But they can no longer coach them up because they're scared they're going to leave. You know what I mean?
You're 100% right about that. And I mean, I think it comes coming and going where, you know, you don't want to have to outbid somebody for a player because then you lose your leverage, and then once you get him,
right,
you lose it as well. I mean, I know for a
right.
fact there's a player who I think would have won Alabama a national championship. He would have been on the team. I think in 21 and 22, and Saban wouldn't go for it. The guy, it was actually 20. Yeah, I think it was a 22 team, and
mm-hmm.
and quite frankly, it cost Alabama. They didn't have a receiver, a money receiver, and this guy was the best receiver in the country. And he told a friend of mine, he's I can't buy this guy. Even though it was legal, he said, how am I going to deal with him?
Yeah, coaches have lost so much leverage today with, you got to kind of, pamper them and, smile at them and say, I mean, you can't coach them up anymore. And I know each individual is a little different, but the leverage of the coaches, it's got to be very, very frustrating. And, if you don't keep them happy, they're going to leave, and that threat of them leaving is always knocking on their door. So I'm not a smart man, but I don't know how to fix it, but they've got to fix this.
You're 100% correct. Hey, thank you very, very much. We're heading to a break. We'll go down to Baton Rouge in a few minutes and get the latest on LSU. We had Brian Kelly on yesterday, of course. We will be back with more of your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.